You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
How does a beautiful young mom seemingly disappear into thin air, reportedly getting into an Uber or Lyft to catch a flight, and then she's never seen again, ever? She just evaporates. But then we find out there never was an Uber or a Lyft. Can't find any trace of an airplane flight planned. Where is Anna Walsh, mother of three beautiful little boys, ages 2, 4, and 6? In the last days, we learn about a very bizarre twist in the disappearance of this young mom. I find a very unusual, very curious ransom note. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us here at Fox Nation and Sirius XM 111. First of all, take a listen to our friends at WCVB.
Another piece of evidence in the case, a bizarre email claiming Anna had been kidnapped. The day before Brian was arrested, at 5:18 in the morning, Cohasset police received that message from a Gmail account stating, "We have the so-named Anna Walsh with us here. We had a deal worth $127,000. She messed up. We have her here with us, and if she doesn't pay the money, then she'll never be back." There is no additional information, but we know by this point, police believe Brian had been lying to them.
A ransom note. A ransom note. What, if anything, can we learn from this note? We have the so-named Anna Walsh with us here, dot, dot. We had a deal worth $127,000, dot, dot. She messed up, dot, dot. We have her here with us. And if she doesn't pay the money, dot, dot, then she'll never be back. And we know that the police and the FBI are involved, dot, dot. Good luck finding us. Who, other than a librarian, would use ellipsis, dot, 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 to suggest an unfinished thought, switching to another theory, another topic? Who would use ellipses other than a school teacher or someone highly educated that knew how to use them correctly? And who would say, The so-named Anna Walsh. Who makes a deal for $127,000? The wording, so-named. In many ways, this reminds me of the faux ransom note in the JonBenet Ramsey case, and I'll tell you why. In the Anna Walsh case, we have ellipses. We have the use of so-named Anna Walsh. Who wrote that? A librarian? A lawyer? We have this exact and very unique ransom figure, $127,000. We see blaming Anna Walsh for, quote, messing up and welching on a $127,000 deal. Let's think about the bogus ransom note in the JonBenet Ramsey case. You have, in that case, an accent, like an accent grave when you write fiancé and you put the little accent mark over the E on the end. In that case, the accent was actually included on the word attaché, because whoever wrote the bogus ransom note reminded John Ramsey to bring an attaché case big enough for the money, as if he didn't know that. You also hear the word hence H-E-N-C-E used in the JonBenet bogus ransom note. Hence. Who says hence? Not okay, she pointed at me. Yes, occasionally I do use the word hence, but very rarely. Who do you know that says hence in common parlance, common talk? Nobody. But the author of that bogus ransom note in JonBenet Ramsey's case did. There was also a very unusual amount in that case for ransom, $118,000, precisely the amount of the bonus that John Ramsey had just gotten. And there was shaming of John Ramsey. Don't try to grow a brain, John. Why? When I say bogus, it's because it was false. There was no ransom. I mean, who writes this big, long ransom letter and a practice note right there in the home on Patsy Ramsey's notepad with Patsy Ramsey's pen, and then somewhere in the night goes, you know what? Forget the ransom. I'm just going to kill this child and leave her right here in the basement. My whole plan for ransom, forget it. As in this case, do you really believe there was a legitimate ransom? Okay, I'm comparing it right now to the JonBenet Ramsey case, but let's take a listen to our cut 77.
911 emergency.
Hello, my name is police.
What's going on?
515 Street.
What's going on there, ma'am?
We are kidnapped.
Hi, please. Explain to me what's going on, okay?
There, we have a, there's a note left in our daughter's phone.
A note was left in your daughter's phone?
Yes.
How old is your daughter?
6 years old. She's blind. 6 years old.
Yeah, that ransom note sounded like a fifth grade girl was writing a mystery romance novel and came up with that ransom note in the JonBenet Ramsey case. And let me be clear, I have never had the theory that Burke Ramsey, the brother of JonBenet, had anything at all to do with her death. That's a fantastical theory, and it was from the beginning, even statistically. I also, for forensic reasons, do not believe John Ramsey, the father, had anything to do with JonBenet's death. But we see right there in the beginning with the 911 call, it's all about the ransom note. We're hearing about a ransom note in the very, very beginning. But what else do we know about that ransom note? And from that note, what can we extrapolate in the Anna Walsh case? Take a listen to our cut 78, our friends at ABC.
As she headed down this spiral staircase, something catches her eye. Several pieces of paper.
There were three pages neatly laid across one of the runs of the stairway.
Pages scrawled with a handwritten, heart-stopping message. It was a ransom note.
Of all of the evidence left behind, that ransom note is the most baffling.
Reporter Diane Diamond has covered the story from the beginning. She says the author of the ransom note seemed to know a lot about the family. The demand for $118,000 was close to the exact amount of John Ramsey's bonus that year.
A ransom note is not that long. A ransom note says, I have your child, I want $1 million, I'll call you later. This is 2.5 pages long. Whoever does that?
And the positioning of that note caught the eye of Patsy Ramsey as she heads down the spiral staircase. She's the one that finds the note, clearly placed on the spiral staircase. Obviously, the kidnapper did not have a problem hanging around at the crime scene. No concern she would be caught. With me and All-Star Panel to make sense of what we know right now. But first, I want to go to breaking news investigative reporter for the Washington Examiner, Rachel Schilke. Rachel, thank you for being with us. Explain to us where, how was the ransom note communicated in the Anna Walsh case?
It's such an interesting piece of evidence to come forward that sometimes I don't even fully understand it myself. But the way that it was presented to me is that, you know, police detectives received an email from this random Gmail account And then obviously, as we heard the message read, and a lot of former FBI agents and a lot of even current detectives have said that the ransom note just seems to be very odd. There's a very specific dollar amount. There is a very poor use of English. There is this weird, as you mentioned, Nancy, that those ellipses, is just a very odd thing to happen. And it arrived on January 7th. And this was a few days after she was reported missing. And so it's too likely to be coincidental.
Well, I don't find any improper grammar, though. We have the so-named Anna Walsh with us here. We had a deal worth $127,000. She messed up. We have her here with us as if there's more than one person. And if she doesn't pay the money, then she'll never be back. And we know that the police and the FBI are involved. Good luck finding us. It's kind of like a little taunt there at the end. I find something that Rachel Schilke just said very, very probative. In other words, it proves something. Take a listen to our Cut 66, our friends at WBZ.
On January 7th, days after Anna disappeared, a Cohasset detective says he received an email from a Richard Walker. That person wrote, quote, "We have the so-named Anna Walsh with us here. We had a deal worth $127,000. She messed up. We have her here with us, and if she doesn't pay the money, then she'll never be back. And we know that the police and the FBI are involved. Good luck finding us," close quote. So police say they were immediately suspicious because there were no instructions on how or when to respond.
How or when to respond? Same thing as in JonBenet and in so many other cases with ransom notes. What kind of ransom note is it if it doesn't tell you how you're supposed to pay the ransom or how you're supposed to get the missing person back? Pause for a big thank you to our partner making today's program possible. It's Fox Nation and its brand new series, Scampreneur. Hey, do you love a good con artist story? Then you need to check out the new Fox Nation series, Scampreneur. This series takes a deep dive into the outrageous lies and elaborate scams pulled off by three master manipulators, Elizabeth Holmes, Carrie Farrell, and Anthony Gignac. In episode one, meet the Silicon Valley swindler, Elizabeth Holmes, who cons the world and wealthy investors into her wishful thinking. Will she pay the price for her crimes? Episode 2, learn about the hipster grifter, Carrie Farrell, who scammed her own family and friends out of thousands, but the police had a plan of their own. Episode 3, learn about the fake Saudi prince, Anthony Gignac, who spent 2 decades committing low-level grifts, but his next get-rich-quick scam turns out to be his biggest mistake. Through interviews with investigators, victims, and whistleblowers, Scampreneur reveals how these con artists were captured and punished for their crimes. Don't miss this incredible series, Scampreneur, streaming now on Fox Nation. Thanks, Fox Nation, for being our partner.
Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Joining me right now, Professor of Forensics, Jacksonville State University, author of Blood Beneath My Feet, on Amazon, and star of a hit new series, Body Bags, with Joe Scott Morgan. Joe Scott, there's a lot wrong with this ransom note.
Yeah, a tremendous amount. But then again, I have to wonder, relative to the origins of this note, and a big question that I have, Nancy, is the specific detective that received this note.
Detective Harrison Schmidt.
Right. And, you know, detectives have in larger departments, they'll have very specialized jobs. You know, you worked in Atlanta for a long time. You dealt with robbery detectives, burglary detectives, certainly homicide detectives. Is he kind of in a smaller department, an overarching detective that handles crimes against persons or crimes against property? Would he have been a central point of interest for somebody that would want to send a ransom note to, that they knew that it would get into his hands because there's a potential he might specifically be working a case? And, you know, is it targeted at that detective specifically? And you can learn, I think, a lot about the person that generated this note based upon that.
Did you notice the $127,000, I'm comparing that to the $118,000 in the JonBenet case, is a very unusual and specific amount. It's not $250,000. It's not $100,000. It's not $1 million. It's very, very significant.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes you wonder, I think, in a lot of cases like this, is that a number that's simply placed in there? Could any number have fit? Is it something that they're arbitrarily throwing out? I mean, you know, you recited chapter and verse regarding the Ramsey case, and people know about this case everywhere. You've got a six-digit figure here that's being thrown out. It seems rather random. You think about the familial history. You know, what was the financial standing of this family? You know, what was her financial standing? What was her personal wealth? Had she recently received those kinds of monies that someone would have been aware of? Again, as a detective, going back and digging into their personal accounts and understanding what their balances were in everything from money market accounts to savings accounts that they might have is certainly important.
I know that Harrison Schmidt, as of recently, was a sergeant. Now he is a detective. But I'm thinking about the sending of the email to a police detective with no instructions about how to transfer the money, referring to, quote, us, blaming Anna Walt, she messed up. Guys, it's certainly not the first time a ransom note has taken center stage in an investigation. Do I have to say Frank Sinatra Jr.? Take a listen to our Cut 79, our friends at Inside Edition.
Frank Jr. inherited his father's looks and velvet voice. When Jr. was just 19, he was kidnapped at a casino in Lake Tahoe.
The horrifying ordeal of Frank Sinatra Jr. began while he was filling an engagement at Lake Tahoe.
The mastermind was a troubled young man named Barry Keenan.
He knew I was dangerous. He knew I was just one crack away from killing everybody or not killing me. He didn't know, but he could tell I was crazy.
Inside Edition spoke to Barry Keenan in 2004. Keenan and two cronies were paid a ransom of $240,000, the equivalent of $1.8 million today. The thugs released Junior on an LA freeway overpass. Then he walked home to the family's mansion in Bel Air.
I was scared. I was a little bit nervous naturally, but the only thing I could do was hope for the best.
Keenan was caught and spent 5 years in prison.
You know, David Leroy joining me, high-profile lawyer out of Boise, former Idaho Attorney General, former Lieutenant Governor, now private attorney at dleroy.com. Did you notice in Sinatra and even in the JonBenet case, the ransom note is sent to the person that's going to pay the money, not to cops? So if you then extrapolate from there, why didn't the kidnapper send the ransom note to Brian Walsh? He's going to be paying the money. Why send it to a detective?
Well, if Brian Walsh was the author, it might make some sense of a great and compelling nature. But Nancy, you know, we do know exactly who sent this email. It was Richard Walker, but it wasn't just Richard Walker. It was Richard Walker with another random number, 9984. As you know, sometimes those numbers, too, in an internet address mean something. What does 9984 mean?
Good point. David Leroy joining us, and I want to go back to Joseph Scott Morgan. Joe Scott, this is from a Gmail address. How hard is it to track down the IP provider? I mean, when you go about tracking down an email, it's not rocket science. It's not brain surgery. I mean, explain in a rudimentary fashion how an IP address is obtained from an email.
Yeah, and the you know, the point of origin that this, look, you and I could sit down. We could actually have a race right now to see who could set up a Gmail account the quickest, because it's something that's so very easily done. But when we set these up, there's going to be a specific identifier that will lead back to the device, whether it be a computer terminal or perhaps our phone, that will be distinct to us, that they will be able to track down and identify.
K-I-S-S. Keep it simple.
Well, no, I mean, it is simple.
I can't even fix my mouth to call you stupid, so I won't do that. IP address. How easy is it to track an IP address?
It's an individual personal identification, and it's very simple for them to do. Particularly, look, the guy that wrote this, or gal, when they wrote this, they said, we know the FBI is involved in this.
Oh, wait. Let's not bring God into this, okay? Watch your mouth. Okay, go ahead.
Duly noted. Yeah, my gosh. It would have been, they're poking the bear, you know, because what the FBI and other federal agencies can bring to bear, particularly when it comes to a kidnapping, Nancy, and you know better than anybody that this is their jurisdiction, they're going to bring all of their efforts to bear in this particular case. They can run this IP address down very, very simply to get into the guts of whoever did this. My suspicion is that they know the point of origin of this Gmail account by this time. And now this information has come out. I'm sure that they've already probably tied this back to someone.
I got another a tidbit for you, but I think I need a shrink on this. Let's go to Karen Stark, renowned psychologist, joining us out of Manhattan. You can find her at KarenStark.com. That's Karen with a C. From Richard Walker. Wasn't that his name, Rachel Schilke? The person that reportedly sent the ransom email was Richard Walker?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Hey, and Rachel Schilke, we're all experts in our own right. You're the one that knows the facts the best. So when we get it wrong, please just jump in. Don't hesitate. Karen Stark.
Yes.
I was with you when I started writing my first fiction called 11th Victim, and it was largely based on a mishmash of a collage of people I had met, defendants, killers, defense lawyers, crazy nuts in the courthouse. And there was a woman that I patterned after, a former co-anchor, who was single and was on the dating scene. And I, based on all these cases we were covering at Court TV, made up a guy who had a fake email. And I based it actually on an allergist who murdered his wife. He had the fake email of Casual Guy 2000. Ugh, whatever. But have you noticed when people create their own alias? Remember Anthony Weiner? Wasn't his alias Carlos Danger? Please correct that. I don't think I'm wrong, because that's the kind of thing that just sticks in your head and you can't get rid of it. When he would be texting underage girls, Carlos Danger, I think. Anyway, there's a lot to be analyzed by using the fake name of Richard Walker.
Well, there's a lot to be analyzed when anyone is using a fake name, Nancy. I mean, some people have other emails because they want a lot of their scam stuff to just to go somewhere else. But in this case, you really have to analyze why would someone do it, and I am positive they can get to the bottom of where that came from.
I remember a friend of mine, the boyfriend, she actually thought she was going to marry. Thank goodness she didn't. Was dating her exclusively, but would have all of these fake email addresses where he would write women all over the country, all over the world, with fake names and make himself sound very adventurous and handsome. I can't remember. Yeah, I think he may have used a fake picture. I can't remember that part. But everything he wanted to be was how he presented himself to all of these women all over the world. And I'm thinking about choosing the name Richard Walker. Now, of course, in the Frank Sinatra case, here's another important distinction. They really actually wanted the money, as opposed to the JonBenet Ramsey case. They didn't want the money. That was subterfuge because they said, hey, I'll just kill her. Forget about the money. What's the main point of a kidnap by ransom is to get the ransom, right?
Exactly.
So in Frank Sinatra, they wanted the money and they got the money. We got another case. The name Getty, as in Paul Getty, I mean, the richest person ever to live. There was a ransom, a kidnap, and a ransom note. But just because you ask the richest person in the world for money does not mean you're going to get it. Take a listen to my longtime friend, Jim Murray, at Inside Edition at Aircut 80.
He was the richest man in the world. But when billionaire John Paul Getty's 16-year-old grandson was kidnapped, he refused to pay a dime in ransom. The real kidnapping in Italy in 1973 made headlines around the world. The teenager's distraught mom pleaded with the kidnappers. Only when the kidnappers cut off the boy's ear did his grandfather agree to pay, but only as much as he could deduct from his taxes, $2.2 million. The rest of the ransom, $700,000, was deemed a loan. The teenager had to pay back with 4% interest. This was the dramatic scene when the boy was released and reunited with his mother. But there was no happy ending. He OD'd and suffered a stroke when he was just 24. And he spent the rest of his life in a wheelchair. He died in 2011.
So I guess the takeaway is thanks, Grandpa. Kind of. Another ransom note where they actually really wanted the money. But let's think about it. Rachel Schilke joining me, breaking news reporter for the Washington Examiner on this case in the very beginning. I didn't understand that Brian Walsh and Anna Walsh had a lot of money. I mean, he was committing art fraud with Andy Warhol paintings to get money, thousands of dollars of money, and it being convicted. Now, his dad had money, and he kind of swindled his dad out of money, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and I remember that was a big part of this case that kind of proved that his character was a little shifty, and that helped investigators kind of look in his direction.
Now, we've heard a lot of figures thrown around about the Walsh's net worth, but if they were worth a lot of money, why would Anna Walsh be traveling from home all the way to D.C. to work and really killing herself trying to make money if they had money? So if they don't have a lot of money, why would a perp come up with $127,000? Ransom notes are real. Kidnappings are real. One particular ransom note just put a chill down my spine. It was sent by who we now know to be a serial killer, one of the most prolific serial killers in U.S. history, Israel Keyes, and he kidnapped a gorgeous young Alaskan barista from her coffee stand out in the middle of a parking lot. Nobody could see anything because snowbanks were up around the little coffee drive-through, so nobody saw the kidnap. All that was left was an Americano cup of coffee that was being prepared on the counter where Samantha was making the customer's request, and then she was kidnapped. A ransom note was sent in that case. Take a listen to our Cut 5, Method of a Serial Killer.
Then, 2.5 weeks after Samantha's abduction, there's a chilling turn in the case.
Her boyfriend just goes sheet white. He's got his phone and there's a text from her phone.
Basically, it says, Connors Park, underneath Elbert Pick, ain't she pretty?
Authorities race to Connors Lake Park, just 5 miles southwest of downtown Anchorage, not knowing what's waiting for them.
When you enter that park, there's a bulletin board, and tacked was a Ziploc bag that had what ultimately was a photograph of Samantha and a ransom note.
The fact that there was a ransom note really ratchets up the tension because, okay, she's alive, and what are we going to do to get her back?
Well, that's one ransom note that I'll never forget, particularly because of a very, let me say, grainy photo of Samantha Koenig, the victim, that was part of the note. Take a listen to our friends at Oxygen.
A text message sent from Samantha's phone directs investigators to their biggest clue yet, a ransom note with a picture of the missing girl.
In the photograph, Samantha was bound, tape on her mouth, but it was obviously intentionally made fuzzier. So they took the photograph to her father for him to identify it. He, after looking at it for a long time, said, yes, that's Samantha. But her hair was in a braid. and Samantha never wore her hair that way.
In the ransom note, Samantha's kidnapper demands $30,000 be placed in her bank account.
This is really our biggest break because we know that we can still potentially have contact with the person responsible for taking Samantha.
Authorities work with her dad to deposit a portion of the ransom, and then they wait.
I told them he's going to use her debit card. If he was going to do something stupid, that was going to be the one thing he did that was stupid because we could find him.
The reason the photo of Samantha was so blurry is because in that photo, she was already dead. Israel Keyes had braided her hair, not realizing that she would never have worn her hair that way and had never worn her hair that way. He applied makeup to her face and he stitched her eyelids open, blurred the photo and sent it to make it appear as if she were alive. He wanted the money. Now, let's talk about what we've got right here in this case regarding this ransom note, not other bogus ransom notes, but this case. So, you know, Joseph Scott Morgan, what else can we learn from what we know about this ransom note? How are we going to catch you? I believe to be a killer by using this ransom note.
Well, when you consider the context of the note, it's very taunting, isn't it? And I think that what you're going to have is somebody that's rather bold, because you said earlier on, Nancy, that this was not sent to somebody that could produce money in order to facilitate her release. You're talking about a police officer. We don't know if the individual is random or not, or if they were specifically targeted, but it was somebody who generated this thing that they were brave enough and bold enough to send it directly to a law enforcement agency. That's a big tell for me. I don't recall ever in any case that I've ever heard of where a ransom note has been issued, where it's sent to a law enforcement agency as opposed to a group of people that could facilitate cash, you know, bringing about cash, putting it in a satchel, dropping it off a bridge or leaving it in a drop box or someplace. This was sent to a police officer. So that gives you an idea, I think, at least. I don't want to get too far off into the weeds in Karen's area, but there's a real boldness here. So I think that whoever did this has got, let's say, an ironclad constitution.
And again, why send it to police?
Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Joining me also is a renowned medical examiner joining us out of the Vegas jurisdiction, Dr. Jan Gorniak. Dr. Gorniak, it's a real honor to have you joining us today. Dr. Gorniak, please take a listen to Our Cut 59 from NBC 10.
He was also captured visiting dumpsters at apartment complexes. By the time detectives searched them, most of them had been emptied and the contents incinerated. But in Swampscott, investigators found a number of items belonging to Anna, as well as some of the items Mr. Walsh had purchased.
The hacksaw that was had red-brown staining in several areas. When it was disassembled, a small fragment of bone was recovered. The Tyvek suit had a red-brown stain on the exterior. The stain was tested, and Anna Walsh was DNA was determined to be a contributor.
Brian Walsh's defense attorney claims evidence testing so far has been inconclusive.
Well, you can't rule him out. The conclusion was you can't rule him in.
Dr. Jan Gorniak, as I said, renowned medical examiner, joining us out of Clark County, Office of the Coroner. Dr. Gorniak, we don't have a body, yet I believe Anna Walsh is dead. I also believe she was dismembered. Explain to me how difficult it really is in real life, not on Dexter, not on some made-for-TV movie, how difficult is it to dismember a human body?
Well, I've never done it. I would assume it would be very difficult because, one, you would have to know anatomy, the easier place to, and I don't want to give away how to dismember a body on your show, but to be able to know where the joints are. But depending on the implement that you're using, it's going to take a while and it's going to be tiring. I've had a couple of dismembered decedents in my career where sometimes you even see like a postmortem stab wound where the person like used the leg as a pincushion because they had to put the knife down. So it would be very difficult, especially without knowing the anatomy and, like I said, the implement that you're using to cut through not only the skin, but also the bone.
Would that explain the tiny bone fragment still attached to a hacksaw found in a dumpster near Brian Walsh's mother's condo?
Absolutely. So obviously the hacksaw isn't clean, but you're going to get, you know, you can see the striations of the hacksaw. So you're going to actually have tissue that is stuck within those teeth of the blade.
Nancy, Dave Leroy here. Another allegation or component of the ransom note that may tie into the husband's involvement is the phrase, "She messed up." Did she mess up in a real estate deal, or did she mess up by having an affair on the husband?
Wow. That's a really good point. To Rachel Schilke, a lot has been made. Joining us from the Washington Examiner, a lot has been made of her affair. Rachel, I want you to hear our cut 48. Our friend Nick Giovanni, WBZ.
In December of 2022, it had become evident that Mr. Walsh was suspecting his wife of having an affair.
His mother did hire a private investigator shortly before New Year's that year. She told Mr. Walsh that she was doing that. He said she was crazy, Anna's a good girl, but go ahead. You'll be proved wrong.
Prosecutors then went through the timeline from when Anna Walsh was last seen to when they say Brian first reported her missing.
So, Rachel Schilke, I don't think there's any doubt that Anna was having an affair at the time she was murdered. Could that be what the ransom note author was describing when he says she messed up? So, Rachel Schilke, I've got another question, a timing question. When was the bone on the hacksaw found, and when did this ransom note, when was it sent to Detective Schmidt?
Well, the note was sent on January 7th, so that's about 4 days, 3 days after she was reported missing on January 4th. And I believe the hacksaw was found a week later, maybe even a few days later. That would be something I would have to be fact-checked on by anyone else on the panel, but I remember that the note was sent before the hacksaw was found.
So much like the JonBenet Ramsey bogus ransom note, here we've got an alleged ransom note, and then they seem to think better of it and go, oh, to hay with it. I'm just going to kill her. It doesn't make sense. Or does it? And I want to go back to dismembering to...
Nancy?
Yeah, I was just going to you. Have you, Karen Stark, and I know that you don't. I mean, you're in Manhattan, you order food, but have you ever tried to cut apart a chicken, an actual chicken, and cook it?
I'm not good.
So no. Okay. I knew that was coming.
I knew that you knew.
Hold on. I thought I knew, but I thought I'd just throw it out there on a leap of faith. Just got Morgan. A lot of people don't even want to cut apart a chicken to cook it.
I'm one of them.
Yeah. There. Proof. So my point is, who goes through all of that to dismember a body? And this is after they just sent a ransom note?
And Nancy, yeah. I would like to jump in and say that I did my own little fact-checking on myself, and the hacksaw was actually found on January 8th. So that was one day after the ransom note was sent.
Thank you. Let me make a note of that. What about that, everybody? So as Rachel Schilke from the Washington Examiner has enlightened us, the note is sent Jan 7. And before 24 hours have passed, she's already dismembered and the evidence thrown away, coincidentally near Brian Walsh's mother's condo in that dumpster. So the kidnapper says, oh, you know, forget about the 127 grand. I'm just going to kill her. What about it, Joe Scott? And then go through all that to dismember a body?
The only thing I can think of is that whoever's facilitating this is making this happen, and that includes the dismemberment and the generating of this note. They are trying to put the police off scent. They're trying to put them off the path of trying to find this woman. You know, at this point, I believe that they still believe that there might be a hope that she was still with us, that she was still alive. And so you throw all of this data out there and they become very, very confused, or at least they hope that the police will be very confused. Keep in mind who the note was sent to, not sent to some family member or somebody else that might have cash that these individuals would be aware of, but it was sent to an investigator, Nancy. To me, that speaks volumes. You know, when you begin to think about, they want to insert themselves into the middle of the investigation as it's ongoing.
Nancy?
Yes.
I want to go along with what Joseph Scott said, because this is a very bold person. And when I think about her husband, he was somebody who was willing to try and pass off fake art. He actually had real art.
Andy Warhol. Like, you can't identify that a mile away.
So he was very bold. Nothing scared him.
Guys, the crux of the information regarding the ransom note, have police and FBI already figured this out? If not, take a listen to our experts today. We wait as the case unfolds. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.